Okay, so last week we saw the Mishnah. We'll just go over quickly the Mishnah, and then we're going to pick apart. Last week we picked apart the wording of the Mishnah, and now we're going to pick apart the actual din, the halacha of the Mishnah. So let's just read over the Mishnah again. Haminiach is a kad b'rishas harabim. The one who placed a kad, a jug, in the rishas harabim, ubo acher v'niskal bo, and then another person came along and tripped over it, b'shavra, and he broke the jug, pata. He is exempt. Mm-hmm. He's exempt from paying the value of this jug that he broke. V'im huzakbo, but if he himself was injured by the jug, then Bale Chavis Chayev Benizko, the owner of the barrel, is obligated in the damage that he caused. And we spoke already last week why it is that we changed the wording from a jug to a barrel. But now we have to discuss the actual halacha of the case.
The Pasha Kasha here is what's the Chiddush. Put something in a public area that doesn't belong to you, person falls over it, hurts himself, well, of course you're responsible. And then what type of chiddush is the Mishnah telling me that? I mean, who would ever think otherwise? If I were to put a roadblock something in the middle of the street, and the car ran over it and got a flat tire because of some nails. I put nails in the street, and the car runs over it, mm-hmm. and gets a flat tire. Who put those nails? Oh, it was me. Okay, pay for my tire.
Yeah. Okay, good. But we did remember we had a role play last week, and we were speaking out, right? That I'm walking along the street, and all of a sudden, bam, crash! I hear a smash, and I've got these. You know, look down. I've got the shards of a mink vase, a mink vase. Not when I'm wearing my mink coat.
Your mink coat.
And I see these shards of a Ming vase, and then Richard runs out and a moment later and says, "Hey, you broke my vase. You got to pay me for my vase."
Vase, British. Okay,
vase.
He's British.
Yeah. I'm British.
We say vase.
Vase or vase? Like vase. Yeah. Vase. Okay, but vase. There was a vase. There was a vase, and it got broken. So I am going to be clear. I'm going to be saying, what do you mean? You left your vase in the middle of the street. Of course it's going to be broken. Right? You're absolutely negligent. You left it there.
The middle of the street doesn't belong to you. The middle of the street belongs to the public.
And on the other hand, Richard is saying,
that's my vase.
Yeah?
That's my vase. You pay for it, you chap.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have left it in the middle of the street.
But you should have watched where you're going, you bloke.
Great! So he said, bloke, mate, geezer, you should have watched where you're going.
Right.
So
you didn't see me.
So this...
You didn't see that vase, that beautiful vase in the middle of the street.
This is a question of the Gemara. The Gemara asks the question, if you turn over to the second side. At the top line, we see the two dots. So he introduces with Ubo Acher V'Niskal Bo V'Shavra Potter, and then someone else comes and he breaks it. He tripped on it and broke it. He is exempt from paying. Asks the Gemara, "Am I Potter? Why is he Potter? Iboy Leili Iyune Umezel. He should have been looking where he's going." This is a halacha that we have in all of the Torah. There is a concept that Odom Muad L'Olam, a person is always warned. Right? Where does this word Muad come from? So there is there's another halacha when it comes to animals. Right? When a person has a shor, has an ox, then an ox, a regular ox, could damage. Yeah, could go ahead and injure someone. If it does, there's a certain level of culpability. There's a certain level of liability for one's ox that went ahead and damaged. Yeah, that liability is chetzi nezek. You have to pay half the damage. Yeah, you've got to be careful. You've got to keep him on a leash, or maybe not take him in the public domain, or make sure that, you know, sort of everything is cleared out. There's a certain level of liability. You have to pay chetzi nezek, half of the damage that it causes. If that ox damages once and then damages another time, and damage is a third time, then there's a chazaka, a very strong probability, presumability, presumption that this ox is going to go ahead and damage again. Every time he walks out, he's been damaging three times. There's a very strong presumption that he could go ahead and damage. He gets the din of a shor hamuad, of a warned shor. The base din, the court take the owner of the ox and they say, your ox is warned. He is he's damaged these three times, and therefore you have to make keep an extra eye on him. If he damages again, then the person is obligated full damages.
Is that
full liability?
Is that on the third time or after the third time?
I think it's after the third time, but I think over here there's the discussion of the machlokes between whether a chazaka is after two times or three times.
Okay.
So that is called a shor hamuad. A shor hamuad is an ox which is warned for damage. And then I'm liable for guilty for all damage. I have to pay the full amount. And the shor himself, if the ox would go ahead and kill another animal or kill a person, the ox itself is killed for it. Because it became muad. Muad means that he is
accustomed
and liable and likely to be damaging, to damage. A person, on the other hand, doesn't have the same halacha of only getting the status of muad after three times. Adam muad la'olam. A person is always warned for damage that it could possibly cause, which means that we have to be constantly, always aware of our actions, aware of what we're doing, right? An ox is an ox, right? What do I have to expect? I don't have to expect my ox is going to be goring, you know, every single time he goes out in the street. I have to pay, you know, half accountability, half liability. But for a person, that we have to be much more on top of ourselves and on top of what we're doing. We are always warned. Adam muad la'ilam, which means that halachically what the implications of this concept of Adam muad la'ilam means is that even when we cause damage by accident, completely, absolutely by accident, then we are liable and accountable, held accountable for the damage that we cause.
I mean, the appearance is very interesting that you're learning this. When I was 13, so I never had any clue as to why, what Judaism had to do with this. You know, I thought Judaism was Shabbos and Pesach and Rosh Hashanah and Hanukkah and Purim and, you know, and then, what?
Shavuos,
right?
Not necessarily. People don't know Shavuos.
Well, we knew in Chicago. I took 2 days off. That's why. So I was the only kid who took 2 days off, and I was in seventh grade, but even sixth grade. But when we started learning this when I was 13, I said, "What does this have to do with Judaism?" Right? But we just did Daf Yom. We just finished Daf Yom. We did a Siyum on Bava Basra. Bava Basra is 170 blot. And so we did Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Brasa, all the Bavas. Mm-hmm. And we're learning it with the Yitzchak Fund. It's a fellow in the community who is a lawyer. So he took all the cases for the last year almost, because it took us almost the whole year to finish, all these civil, legal ideas. And he would say, yeah, this case happened to me just yesterday. This case happened 6 months ago. Every single case that he saw in the Gemara, he said, yeah, this is exactly how we do it. Because he's dealing with frum people. And they all want to deal with the situation as it occurs according to the halacha. And he said, all the whole Gemaras was exactly what was happening to him.
100% relevant. Yeah.
But the problem is this bloke left his bars out at night. And I couldn't see it.
One second. We're in a laboratory, remember.
Laboratory.
No, laboratory.
Okay. Laboratory, which means what? It means that any details that are extraneous to the actual Mishnah itself are variables, which we don't know about. We can't assume any variables. Right. Any variable which is going to make a difference, which is going to be a significant variable, we have to leave it out. We have to presume it never happened. All we have are just the facts that we have in front of us. So we have this concept. So what does this halacha mean? This halacha of odom mu'ud la'olam. It means that if I'm stretching like this, and there's a vase on the side there, or there's a glass there, I'm accountable. I'm liable. I'm guilty because I should have watched where I was going. How far does this go? This goes so far as to make you accountable even when you're sleeping. If you are sleeping, and on the bedside table there's a lamp, and in the middle of your sleep you turn over in the middle of the night and you push the lamp off the bedside table and it breaks, you're chayev.
You're chayev.
You have so to pay for that.
So this way in the Marriott, they're very heavy lamps, you know.
Yeah. So,
why? How could that possibly be? How could it be? You have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. When you're going to sleep, you have to know you're moving around. Do you move around a bit? Yeah. Do you toss and turn? You should move your bed away a little bit from the lamp. You should be careful. When are you not going to be accountable when you're sleeping? If in the middle of the night someone moved a lamp there, then that you're putter for. That you're exempt from paying. Because there you wouldn't have known.
How you prove that?
How can
you have to go on the cameras and check the videotape.
Right. There you couldn't know. If someone came and laid down the case in that's discussed in the Gemara, if someone came and laid down next to you in the middle of the night, and you when you moved over you hurt them, damaged them, injured them, then that you're not accountable for. You're not liable for because there I can't have been warned because I didn't know what was happening.
Is this a case
I went to sleep.
Where a mother has her baby in the bed with her and turns over and Chas V'Shalom kills the kid.
Shlomo HaMelech. Mm-hmm. King Solomon. That's the case that came before King Solomon.
Mm-hmm. And?
Right. And then, you know, the famous case where the mother said that it was not her son, her child, and then so King Solomon said, okay, so let's split the baby in half. And he knew the one that said, no, I would rather her take it than to damage my than to kill my baby.
Right.
Yeah.
That wasn't exactly where I was going, but anyway.
But you got there.
You got there.
We're just going to reverse.
When I had a question, and the Rebbe said, "Well, what you're really asking is this, you know."
We got there, but now we're just going to back up a little bit and get back here. So this is the Gemara's question. The Gemara asks, "How can it be when this guy is walking along the street and there's a vase in front of him, and he walks and knocks into it and smashes it, that he's potter? What do you mean he's potter?" We have a principle, Adam Mu'ud La'ilam. A person is always warned, is always accountable. And my potter, why is he potter? Iboy Leila Iune Mezel. He should have been looking where he's going. Adam Mu'ud La'ilam. You're always going to be accountable. You always have to be aware of where you're going. How can we possibly say that he's potter? So this is a very, very, very strong question on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that he's potter in this case, but we have a rule. The rule is Adam Mu'ud La'ilam. He can't be potter. If Adam Mu'ud La'ilam, he's always going to be chayev. Right? So, we have, because of this very, very big, strong difficulty on the Mishnah, we have a license to add in extraneous details to the Mishnah. We are now going to use a principle called an ukimta. An ukimta is basically the ability to add in an extra detail in the Mishnah. In order to make it make sense. In the words of my Rebbe, Rabbi Siegel, which I'm sure Rabbi Miller knows, Rabbi Siegel calls this a logic language override. Right? When the logic dictates that it doesn't make sense, then we are allowed to override the language of the Mishnah. We're allowed to override the case. And we're allowed to add in an extra detail in the case. And that is going to be...
He's your namesake, right?
Yep. Nikra al Shem Rabbi. So what is this? Omri.
See, I like to add, when we said the Gemara asked the question, when I was a kid, I never understood who the Gemara was. Oh, the Gemara asks. Gemara is not a person. Who's this Gemara?
Mm-hmm.
Until I started... you know, be looking into it. And I realized that the Gemara was redacted in the 5th century by Ravina and Ravashi. They were the last ones, and there were some others later, but they were the basic ones who redacted it. So when they saw a Mishnah, they would ask the question, and they said, the Gemara asks, it's Ravina and Ravashi, or both of them, asking that editorial question, so to speak.
Yeah.
Since they're the editors of the Gemara. Right.
Oh,
wow.
This is for... Okay.
What was that?
No, but it looks a help understand the text. It's edit
exactly.
Better readable.
So Ravina Ravashi bringing up a question that seems to contradict what Rebbe wrote. This is Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi who wrote in the Mishnah. There are people out there writing this or dictating it.
Yep.
I'm sure you explained that, Paris. I'd just like to bring that up.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's well done. Thank you.
I remember, you know, as I was learning this as a kid.
Yeah.
You have all these thoughts.
Okay, so Omri Deve Rav Mishmei De Rav. So the house of Rav said in the name of Rav that we are dealing with a different case. The situation is not just a simple case that this guy is walking along the street and he sees a barrel, and he doesn't see a barrel, and he knocks into the barrel. What's the case? We're talking about a case, B'memale Rishus HaRabim Kula Chavyes. We are talking about a case, we must be talking about a case, where the whole public domain is full of barrels. So when the public space is full of barrels, what am I supposed to do?
You navigate your way between them.
What if there's no way between them?
Also, you're basically forewarned. You realize that, you know, it's not easy to get down that street without breaking a barrel.
Right.
So what if there is absolutely no space there whatsoever to move? Someone covered the whole sidewalk with barrels.
Go back. You're going over.
Obviously, if you can't.
What do you mean go back? Why go back?
And you don't have any other way around. I mean,
if there's no other way around.
You climb over. Or if the
other way around is much longer.
You climb over them, you do whatever you have to do to get
through. The same as people.
Or maybe you have to clear it.
What if they're very, very tall?
Yeah. Very heavy. You don't have the manpower to clear it. Now the thoroughfare is blocked.
Yeah.
Like God forbid, there's an accident. The whole traffic is held up because of this guy who misjudged or whatever. Probably.
So the halacha in such a situation is you're allowed to break them. If someone blocks the public space with their property and there's no way to get through the property, you're allowed to break them. Why is it in our case that he's potter when he's walking along and he stumbles and he trips and he breaks the barrel? Because the whole place was full of barrels and he was allowed to.
Is that it? Okay.
He was allowed to.
But your case of one vase, the chora you have to drive around the vase.
If it's one, absolutely. But we are not talking about a case of one. If it was one, then Adamur L'Olam. He's going to be Chayav. But seeing, then a person who was always warned, you're going to be obligated, liable.
He's not allowed to put that vase in the public thoroughfare because it doesn't belong to him. Still, you have an obligation to drive around it.
Yeah, I have an obligation to look where I am going.
Yeah.
I can't just wantonly walk around damaging everything that everyone put negligently in the middle of the public thoroughfare. However, when it was completely blocked...
You don't like that, right?
No.
He
but
like
if there is an animal or people stay, what to do? Guru, there is if a human animal stay, what do you need?
If it made a roadblock out of humans or animals?
Or for protest of people. Freedom or something.
Right.
Okay. We'll see a little bit later. We're going to come back to this discussion. We're going to come back to it later. But it's a good question.
Yeah.
Protesters, what can one do?
Run over.
So this touches on the question of whether one is allowed to take the law into one's own hands. When and how and which situation one is allowed to take the law into his own hands, which comes up at the end of this page over here.
So far, we're not talking protesters.
Right.
Right. But this is the simple halacha, and this must be, according to Rav, this is the case of the Mishnah. In which case could it possibly be that he's going to be pata, that he's exempt, even though usually we say we've got to look where he's going, in a case where he really is exempt. He really is allowed to go because the whole place was full of barrels. Okay, that is answer number one.
This is Rav's answer.
This is Rav's answer. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to have another answer.
That's a very high answer because Rav is like an Amora. It's like a Tana. Like a Tana.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty...
Pretty
serious akimta. Maybe that's what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was thinking about.
Yep. So according to Rav, this is what the Mishnah means. When the Mishnah says you're pata, it means that the whole place was full of barrels. Right? This is what as we call an ukimta. We are re-establishing the case of the Mishnah. That this is the case of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Because the case we understood, our laboratory test tube case of no external factors, doesn't work. Right? Because adam mu'ad lo'olam, person is always liable. Yeah.
Although Rav is not our posek when it comes to monetary issues.
Shmuel is.
That's right.
Right.
Mm.
There were two schools. Rav was, they were both in Babylonia. And Rav was in Sura, and Shmuel was in Pumbedisa. Pumbedisa, two huge academies of learning. And Rav, whenever something happened to do with something that's forbidden or permissible, Rav was the decisor. When it came to monetary issues, Shmuel was the major decisor. But interesting, he mentions Rav first, Rav and Rav Ashi.
Right. Well, let's see what Shmuel...
You have a horror on that, parents?
I don't think we always see that the person the halacha is like always is mentioned first. I think it was... I don't know why we choose a specific order. Like, sometimes we'll go with, you know, Rava, and sometimes we'll go with Abaya first. I think that it's sort of interchangeable. Right. I guess it was just maybe the first one that spoke up, or the first one that they recalled or remembered. Or
usually sometimes they say by the Basra, we pass them by the Basra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Basra doesn't necessarily mean in a list of opinions. It's usually Basra means in like a time sequence, the person that came later.
Correct.
Okay.
In the timeline. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, the last chronological. Mentioned. Yeah, chronological, okay. That's right. Yeah. Shmuel Amar. Shmuel has a different explanation for the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. And he says, Ba'afela Shanu. We're talking about nighttime, Professor. Why would this be an answer? How's this going to help us?
You can't expect a person to go ahead and see his way through when there's no streetlights. This is before Edison. Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is before the light bulb.
Before Edison.
Person has no reason to... And this isn't combining the two scenarios, right? This is darkness, but only one...
Oh, yes.
One vas.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so at nighttime, Adam Mu'ad Lo'olam, we're not expected to know exactly, right? Just like the case of the guy who's in the middle of his sleep and someone comes along and brings something there. He can't have seen it. He can't have been expected to see it. You've got to, you know, walk around in the night with a blind stick.
Oh, yeah.
Like walking around, a cane, trying to feel your way around. No, that you're not obligated to do. So in this situation, the reason why he would be pata, the reason why he would be exempt, is because it was dark. We're not going to say Adam Mu'ad Lo'olam. We're not going to say that he is liable and always warned for the damage that he could cause. This is the logic language override. This is the additional factor, additional feature, variable that we're adding into the Mishnah to make the Mishnah make sense.
We have Machlokas Rav Shmuel.
Ah, so in a moment we'll discuss whether we have a Machlokas. So, good. Next, Rabbi Yochanan has another explanation. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Bekeren Zovis. We are talking about a Keren Zovis. What's a Keren Zovis? A corner. If a barrel is on the other side of the corner, immediately as you turn around the corner, all of a sudden there's a barrel. Oh. Before you could have seen it. right? You have to walk around, and every single time you're about to walk around a corner, you have to poke your head around to see if there's anything there. No, you just walk. You're allowed to walk. Yeah, immediately, if this barrel was on the immediately other side of the corner, there is going to be a reason why you're going to be exempt. You're exempt because, again, you can't be expected to know what's on the other side of the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So, his word for it, when you can't see something, there's the blind spot.
Yeah. Maybe.
Blind spot, yeah.
This is a blind spot.
Right.
This was in the blind spot. Right. Very good. Okay. Now Shmuel is going to try to analyze these three different answers. Now remember, just to review, we have first the opinion of Rav, and Rav says, what's the case of the Mishnah?
Vaz.
Not a rhetorical question.
Vaz.
What's the explanation for the Mishnah?
What do you mean the explanation?
How did Rav explain the Mishnah? Mishnah says you're pata. How can it be your pata? How can it be your pata? Ademud la'olam. You're always warned. So Rav answered.
You can't get through.
You can't get through. Okay. Rav said the whole Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is full of barrels. Then we had the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel said, Professor.
Yes.
It was nighttime. He couldn't have seen. He wasn't expected. And then we had the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, who said,
Right around the corner.
Blind spot.
Blind spot.
Yeah, around the corner. Okay, so now Rav Papa is going to raise a question on these on one of these opinions. Omar Rav Papa, Loi Daika Masnisin Ella, he says that the Mishnah is only makes sense according to Oika Shmuel, either like Shmuel, Oika Rabbi Yochanan, or like Rabbi Yochanan. Again, what was Shmuel?
Shmuel was dark,
and Rabbi Yochanan was?
Blind spot.
Good. Okay. He's going to have a problem. He has an objection to Rav's opinion. De'ika Rav, because if it was like Rav, my iria niskal. Why should the Mishnah be talking about niskal? What does niskal mean? He tripped.
He tripped
and fell, and he broke. Right. Oh, and he tripped over it, and it broke. Why should the Mishnah be speaking about a case of niskel, that he tripped over it, broke? Afilu shavar nami. Even if he actually broke it actively with his hands, took up the barrel, blazed it overhead, threw it over there like that, nami pata, he would also be absolutely exempt. Because he's allowed to. Because the whole public space is full of these barrels. You're allowed to go ahead and smash them. So why then? On purpose. So why then should the Mishnah use the word niskal? Has to come onto a case of he was walking along and he stumbled. He tripped over it and broke it. Doesn't have to say tripped over it. It works nicely according to Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Shmuel, he tripped over it because it was dark. He didn't see where it was going. Or it was in the blind spot when he came around the corner and he tripped over it. That's okay. That works very nicely. But according to Rav, who says you're allowed to break it because the whole place is full of barrels, why does the Mishnah come onto a case of niskal? Why does it use the word niskal?
Mm-hmm. So this half of me is that if there's an obstruction, you don't have to take that obstruction and put it gently on the side of the road and drive through. But theoretically, you can even halachically take a tank and drive right through it and destroy the obstruction.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you'll probably miss it, but we're going to come on to the details of how one is allowed to take the law into his own hands and to what extreme, right? Are you allowed to drive through a barricade of things with your tank? That we're going to discuss, yeah. Or do you have to place them neatly? No, but over here, at this point, we're certainly assuming that you're allowed to go ahead and break them with your hands actively.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Rav Papa has a difficulty with Rav's understanding of the Mishnah. The Mishnah that speaks about a case of niskal that he tripped, doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. according to Rav's opinion, that says that the case was that the whole public space was full of barrels. If it was, then you're allowed to break it with your hands. You don't have to, not only when you tripped on it.
I think he's bringing a Kal Vachomer here or something. That if he's Pater, even when he did it intentionally, all the more so, Kal Vachomer, if he did it unintentionally.
Yeah, but even without a Kal Vachomer, it's wrong. Right? What's inferred from the Mishnah? What's inferred is from the Mishnah is that only if he tripped.
Right.
But according to Rav, he's allowed to, right? Not only if he tripped, even if he broke it with his hands. But the Mishnah seems to say very clearly, only if he tripped.
Only if he tripped.
So Rav doesn't work, according to the Mishnah. Yeah. Right? His explanation of the Mishnah can't make sense. Because the Mishnah says, only if you tripped. But according to Rav, you'd be allowed to do it even if you did it with your hands. So Rav doesn't fit into the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Unless there is a reason why the Mishnah specifically chose tripped. And yes, the Mishnah would agree 100%. If you broke it with your hands, that's also your putter. But we didn't want to teach the case of breaking with your hands because we could teach a bigger chiddush. We could teach a bigger novel idea that even if you tripped over it, there you would be exempt. Now the Mishnah wants to teach it for a reason, but absolutely 100%, it would be true that even if you broke it with your hands, but specifically we have a reason why we wanted to be talking about a case of tripped. So let's see what that is.
The person basically is tripping over the obstruction and breaking one of the barrels that's part of the obstruction.
Yep. But don't use that to infer that if he broke it deliberately, then he would be chayiv, he would be obligated, because it's not true. This is how we would explain the Mishnah. So let's see how Rav Zvid does it. Omar Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava. Said Rav Zvid in the name of Rava, Hu Adin. The same is true to Afilu Shavar, that even if he actually broke it, he would be Pater. He would be Pater, even if he broke it. Why? Because again, according to Rav, we're talking about the places full of barrels. Mm-hmm. So it's actually true, 100%. It would be true, even if he actually broke it, it would. So, but now we're left with a question. So why did it say tripped then? If it's true that even if he broke it, that's a bigger chiddush. A bigger chiddush than Niskal. Mm-hmm. You're out to actually break it and you're putter, right? Not only just trip over it. So why then did it teach Niskal? Did it teach the use the word that it tripped? V'hai dekatani Niskal. So this that it taught Niskal, why would it teach tripped? Aidi deboy lemisni sefer. Because it wanted to teach the word, the sefer, the last part of the Mishnah. And remember, we have two parts of the Mishnah. One was the guy's walking along, and he tripped, and it broke. Pater. What was the next part of the Mishnah? He's walking along, and he tripped, and it broke, but it broke him. He got injured with that. Then, the Baal Echavis, the owner of the barrel, has to pay for his damages. Okay, ask you a question. If you are walking along and you trip over something that was left negligently in the public domain, and I got hurt, I got damaged on that thing, I got injured, I broke my leg on that thing. So the owner of, let's say, the barrel, let's call it our Ming vase, the owner of the Ming vase, is, what would you say? He has to pay or not?
He's chayv to pay, yeah.
Why?
It was because of his negligence that the other person was damaged.
Okay, yeah, makes sense, right? Yeah. It makes sense. His negligence, I tripped on it, I stumbled on it, and I got damaged by it. So he should have to pay. What if I came along and I said, "Ha! You left your thing in the middle of the road. There's nothing else there. Just one. Yeah? You left it in the middle of the road and threw it to the side. As he threw it aside, one of the shards came back and cut his arm off.
Aye.
Let's talk extreme. Extreme damage, yeah? And damaged him, injured him. He got injured by one of the shards that flew off against the wall. So in such a case, what would you say? The owner of the jug, the owner of the vase has to pay for the damage that he caused?
I would think not.
Certainly not, right?
Yeah.
Certainly not.
Certainly not, because...
Why?
Because
he caused his own damage by
great!
By
being so he bad. Damaged himself!
He unnecessarily
broke that thing, and he damaged himself. If he would have walked around it, then he wouldn't have got damaged. Mm-hmm. If he tripped, that's another story, right? You shouldn't have left it there negligently. Okay, so this is going to be the explanation of the Gemara. Let's see it again. Omar Rav Zvid, said Rav Zvid, Mishmeda Rav, in the name of Rava, Hu Adin. No, the same is going to be true. Afilu Shava. Even if he broke it, you're off the hook because the whole place was full of barrels. Vahai Dekatani Niskel. So why then did it teach that he got tripped? I did a boiler misni sefer. Because it wanted to teach the second case of the Mishnah. Ve'im Huzakba. What's the second case of the Mishnah? That if he got damaged, if he was injured by it, then the owner of the barrel is going to be obligated for the damage that he caused this man. The Dafka Niskel, then in that case it's only going to be if he tripped over it. Aval Shavar, but if the guy came along and broke it, deliberately broke it, lie, it's not going to be true. The owner of the barrel is not going to have to pay for that damage that he caused. My timer, what's the reason? Hu da'azik ha'nafshi. Because this guy brought the damage upon himself. He injured himself. He shouldn't have gone ahead and broken that barrel. He broke the barrel and broke himself on it in the process. He brought the damage on himself. Right? The owner of the barrel, we can't say in that case that he's going to be obligated to pay.
I was once Masadar at Tanoim, and the mother of the Chosin broke the plate, and shards came out of the plate, and created a large cut in her right toe. Well, luckily, her son-in-law was a doctor, so treated her mother for the cut plate from the Tanoim right on the spot. So she turned to him. She said, "Can I sue anybody?" He said, "Mom, you did this to yourself."
Uh-huh. What do you mean? You can sue the Chassan and Kala because the Chassan and Kala are the ones who told their mother to break the plate.
Right?
Yeah, of course not. So since we wanted to teach the...
She broke the plate and the shards caused her own damage.
Yeah. Since the last case of the Mishnah can only be talking about a case of Niskel, where he tripped on it, can't be talking about it that he broke it actively because then he's not the owner of the barrel is not going to have to pay. Since the last case can only be talking about a case of Niskel, Tani Katani Resha Niskel. That's why the author of the Mishnah also used the case of Niskel by the Resha, by the first case. But it would be true that even in the Resha, in the first case, that if he broke it actively, then he for sure would also be exempt. Why? Because again, we're dealing with the case of Rava, that that the whole place was full of barrels. Okay? So we've now answered up that the Mishnah can go very nicely according to Rav, according to Shmuel, and according to Rebbe Yochanan.
Because I always got confused as a kid. If it can go right according to all three, does that mean all three are right?
Okay, so now we have to discuss. Now we have to discuss. So what is the common denominator? What are these three answers doing? We have three answers: Rav, Shmuel, and Rebbe Yochanan. Right, Rav again says the whole place was full. The reason why you're exempt from paying, the reason why you're pater, is because the whole place was full. Right, there was nothing that you could do. But absolutely, Odamud La'ilam. Yeah, you should have been looking where you're going. He should have been looking where he's going. 100%. But in this case, yeah, usually. But in this case, it's different because this case was full of barrels. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shmuel says that usually you've got to look where you're going. Right? During the day, but if you can't see, then we can't be holding you accountable. Adamur la'ilam. Should be looking where you're going, but not in this case. This case is different because it's dark. Rabbi Yochanan says that usually you've got to look where you're going, right? But in a blind spot, that we're going to say you can't have been expected to look where you're going. That's why you're exempt. All three of these answers are making an ukimta. They are all adding an external factor and variable to the case. We're changing the case of the Mishnah, meaning that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree with the question, agree with the premise of the question. The Mishnah says, you trip, you break it, you're pata. The Gemara asks...
Regardless of the situation.
Regardless of the situation. The Gemara asks, or Ravina and Rav Ashi, ask, how can that be? You have to look where you're going. Says Rav, 100%, you're right. We're talking about a different case. Says Shmuel, absolutely, you're right. You've got to look where you're going. Error, you've always got to look where you're going. But we're talking about a different case. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yochanan, 100%, you've got to look where you're going. But we're talking about a different case. Right? So essentially, what we have over here is we have Rav, Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan giving the same answer. Trying to find a backdoor exit from the question. Right? This is what I call sort of pushing off the question. Yeah, this isn't answering the question. The attack, the attack on the mission is very good. It's a very good attack. The attack is based on the principle that you have to look where you're going. That they don't disagree with. They say absolutely, 100%. So essentially, we've got the same answer.
Yeah.
Right? We all have the same answer. What would Rav say in the case of Shmuel when it was dark?
You can't look where you're going.
You say pater.
What would Rabbi Yochanan say about Rav's case?
Say also.
He was a pater. Yeah. And what would Shmuel say in a case where it's not where there's nothing, where it's just a regular case of walking down the street?
That he's chayv.
He's chayv. Yeah. Everyone would agree. Well, what they've done is essentially they've found a loophole. Right, they found a loophole to explain the Mishnah. They've changed the case of the Mishnah, but the reality and the halacha is for sure that when you're walking along and you trip on it, that you're obligated for. There you're chayev because you have to look where you're going. Adamur la'olam, you're always warned for the damage. Okay, this essentially we have three opinions which really are the same opinion. So that's why I was reluctant to answer your question about Rav and Shmuel, because essentially they're saying the same thing. Yeah. Right? This isn't necessarily a machlokes. It's just a different interpretation, right? A different loophole of a way to get out of the question. But the question itself is a very good and strong question.
Which is why you don't have a tzion and Rav Shmuel or Rav Yochanan.
Right, which is why we're not there. There's no psak. There's no machlokes. They're all agreeing that you have to look where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a reason why you don't have to look where you're going, or there's an exception to that, then of course you're not going to be chayev, you're not going to be obligated to pay, you're going to be exempt.
It's also very interesting to have. It's actually not Rav's direct quote. It's the Vei Rav.
B'shem Rav.
I say it's the Vei Rav.
Amri Vei Rav, Mishmei de Rav, in the name of Rav. Yeah.
Yeah, but Shmuel. It's a direct quote from Shmuel.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So can we derive from this that if it was daytime, but it was dark for you, i.e. an Iver, you wouldn't have any reason to expect that in your normal path that there's a Mingvos.
What do you say? Okay, I see what you say. You would say that he would be pata if it was daytime because he's blind.
Yeah,
would everyone agree with that?
Because it's what from?
So Richard says if a person is blind and it's dark for him, then he would still be pata. He would still be exempt because we can't say Iboileilu Mezel. He has to look where he's going because he can't see.
And he had no reason to expect that this
path that he takes every single day that all of a sudden...
Okay. Does everyone agree with Richard?
Yes.
Okay, Barry does.
No.
Professor doesn't. Why not?
Because he has to look where he's going. To him, look where
but
you're
if
going
he's blind,
something else. Doesn't mean look with your eyes. I mean,
the Ming Vas, the stick breaks it, maybe.
It's different responsibility. Look where you're going is a responsibility for a blind man. The responsibility is slightly more complicated.
What if the rod breaks the...
We're in a laboratory.
Okay.
Yep. So does that make sense, Barry? Does that make sense to you? What Professor says?
I didn't quite catch what.
Professor says he may be blind. He's still got to look where he's going. He can't look with his eyes. But he'll have to take a cane, or he has to take a guide dog, or someone else should walk along with him. Adam Mu'ad La'ilam means everyone is warned, whether you're blind or deaf, whatever it may be. A person, all people. Right, there's no exemption to that rule. A person is always going to be obligated for any damage that he causes, because you have to take whatever whatever means you can to make sure you're not damaging.
And then when a person is walking on a dark road, he knows there might be unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So does he have to make himself aware of unforeseen circumstances? Like, you didn't expect that dog to be run over, and then, you know, and then you have to veer away, and you crash into that other car, and, you know, you weren't expecting any of that, but all of a sudden...
No, so there, because it's unavoidable, right? Again, this is how Shmuel is explaining. It's unavoidable that you can't not cause damage because you can't say where you're going. There... There is an extra level of responsibility for the person who left the vase there, right? The person who left the vase there is basically essentially saying that I don't care if it gets damaged because no one can see it, right? And also similarly, we would say if a dog, you know, was there, or even a person was crossing the road and it's pitch black, right? And it was just around the corner. I wonder what the law would say about this, right? And I wasn't speeding. Right there, whose responsibility was that? Mm-hmm. It was the person who was walking in the street. Right, you can't say it was me that was driving along and I came around the corner and or even in broad daylight. Yeah, I came around the corner. I couldn't have looked. Right, I did. I followed all the laws and everything, and I used indicators, and I looked right and I looked left, and there was nothing, no one there. As I came around the corner, someone ran out in front of the car. Right, you can't say that I'm obligated for that.
They sometimes have signs, caution, blind person.
Right. So if that would be there, then I have to, that's telling me, exercise more caution.
Right.
Even when you're crossing that corner, you have to, take more precautions. Right. Yeah. Otherwise, if there's no sign, and there's no flashing light saying school, that kids are going to be running out in front of the street, as long as I'm following the regular rules and regular laws, then I have I'm not expected to be looking and doing anything more than just regular just look where you're going. But if something jumps out in front of me, then I'm not going to be obligated for that. Okay,
like you say, ordinary precautions you have to take, unordinary precautions you don't have to take.
Yep. Very good. Well said.
No, but
well put.
Now was a real question. What you said, everything from Gemara can be a case for real life. We have a lot of different garbage and put in the street for night. This can be furniture, everything. And actually, nobody care about people who are walking.
That's true.
Now somebody at night, even day, did not pay the kids. No, but can make, I don't know, but something happened, he can damage. Who is responsible? People who move furniture, or this is people should watch and bypass? Because there is no room in our city and in our other cities. We have everything before the house.
right?
There is no kind of space only for this.
So you have to, I'm sure the state law is also the same, right? You probably have to make sure there's...
But now I'm thinking, if I'm really responsible, most of cases, of course, this is bad.
Yeah.
But sometimes people play some...
We all say Dina de Malchus Adina. Whatever the law of the state of Massachusetts is, that's the Jewish law also.
That's what we have to follow. Right?
No, but this is very close to what is practical. I don't know the ways. I never heard of
right.
ways.
I mean, if you're setting your garbage out and you set a few other things out, are you going to put it in the middle of the sidewalk? Or are you going to put it all the way to the end so people can...
No, but...
If you're responsible... And
no,
that's what you do,
there
right?
There are special rules. For example, if refrigerator to remove door.
Yeah.
Because some kids...
But
there is no any... Yes, but there is no any regulation. I don't remember what to
say. What's that about the door?
No, door should be removed from the refrigerator.
It's not such an issue now because they... The
sometimes kids go inside. Never able to...
And then what?
Yeah.
If you go inside,
you're getting a refrigerator.
But still, you can get
you put
in
it up
somehow.
In the sidewalk.
Well, that's what happens.
But you're supposed to take the door off.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Why?
So that a kid wouldn't open the door and get caught in it.
Why would he get caught in it?
Because nobody will let the door open for inside.
It closes.
If you go inside,
they used to have like a clip on the...
Yes, if you go inside, you cannot open.
I mean, if you go inside our fridges, you can open them.
The mother is accused of manslaughter.
But
you just push them open. But you're talking about an old fridge that
there is problem to open.
But even somehow, like, you could get in and it could get...
No, but there is some case, whereas for a few cases,
right.
This
right.
is...
Someone
right.
puts
you're
something
you're
next
to right.
it.
No. You're 100% right.
Okay. Okay, so let's have to finish off. So we're just going to see. So again, essentially, we saw that Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan were all saying the same, that it is true that if you were walking along and there was no reason for you to have caused any damage, no reason for you not to have seen where you're going, then you should have looked where you're going. You are obligated. You are chayev for that damage. However, if there's any other reason that would cause for you not to have looked where you're going, or according to Rav, a case where you're actually allowed to go ahead and break it because someone filled up the whole Rishus HaRabim with barrels, then there you're going to be exempt. These are the first three opinions. Now we're just going to see one more opinion, one more explanation of the Mishnah, and that is... just at the, you see where the grey line is down the art scroll line on the side. The line after that, so three words in, says Omar. Omar le Rabbi Abba le Rav Ashi. Says Rabbi Abba to Rav Ashi, Hachi Omri b'ma Rava. This is what they said in Ma Rava. Where's Ma Rava? That's the school that your kids went to, right? Marava means, what does Marava mean? The west. Where's the west? What was the west? Well, where was this written?
In Bavel. So
this was in Bavel. So where was the west of Bavel? Was Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
So this is what they said in Marava. This is what they said in Eretz Yisrael.
California.
This is the terminology.
This is how they refer in the Babylonian Talmud, how they refer to Eretz Yisrael. Hachi Omri b'Marava. B'Marava Omru. In Marava they said. So what did they say?
Small contingent learning in Israel at that time that wasn't in Babylon.
Yeah.
Right.
Mishmei de Rabbi Ula, in the name of Rabbi Ula. Lefi she'ein darkon shel b'nei Adam lehisboinein bedrachim. Because it is not the way of people to contemplate, to focus on the derech, on the way. I think, you know what? We'll call it a day here and we'll explain this next week. Okay.
So we're left hanging.
We have to explain it. There's a Tosfos and there's a couple of things we have to bring in.
This is a very long list of parak. You know, we learned that in Yeshiva Gedolah.